Welcome back to the Baseball America College Baseball Podcast. I'm Jacob Rudner, joined by Ben Badler. Ben, this is the first time that we've had you on the college podcast. How are you?
I am good, Jacob. It was a fun draft week. We saw obviously a very college heavy draft this year, and a lot of good high school players who are going to be playing college baseball next year.
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of people who are listening to this podcast who are excited about that trend, about how some of these guys who are at the top of the recruiting board are going to end up getting to campus. And before we get into some of those classes, I wanted to talk to you about BA's new star system. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Baseball America now has incorporated the widely accepted star system, 5-star, 4-star, 3-star, for high school recruiting. We will apply it, I would imagine, at some point later on to the transfer portal as well. That's something that we're working on. But that is new to baseball, or at least to us at Baseball America. And I wanted to pick your brain on what led us to this, some of the things that went into your considerations for who got what star rating and the ranges that are applied. But so take it away. I mean, what does this addition do for us, and how did you go about it?
Yeah, so we have the BA grades that have been in place for a while on the pro side, 20-80 scale with risk factors for each player throughout our prospect handbook and for our draft prospects as well. But we wanted something that also will apply to recruiting, especially on the high school recruiting side for college, and specifically apply to college baseball. And I thought this was a good way to go about doing it, just to bring more attention to high school baseball recruiting world. And it's something where, look, obviously it's different than other sports where, okay, like if you're Alabama or Michigan or Ohio State, like you're not worried about, hey, is my 5-star quarterback going to make it through the NFL? No, like obviously, you know, you're getting all of those players through to school. But in baseball, it's obviously a difference. So, you know, it's set up a little bit differently than some other sports. But at the end of the day, look, like the 5-star player is that blue chip elite talent recruit where, yeah, like we said before in our in explainer, that we don't expect most 5-stars to get to campus. But when you do get somebody like that to school, and I think we'll have about 15 or maybe a little over 15 5-star players in, you know, who will be playing college baseball, and maybe some guys won't sign too, so that could add a couple of more to the mix. But those are the guys who you expect to be premium impact talents for you coming in, you know, whether it's an impact right away or as a sophomore and junior. Those are the guys you expect to be cornerstone players for, you know, and marquee names among the national scene in college baseball.
And I would also add that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the functions of our star system are reasonably similar, even though there's a, you know, a difference between who's going to get to campus and who not, but reasonably similar to the football star system and the basketball star system, in that the majority of the players that are going to go on to the BA 500, the majority of the players that you're going to see in college baseball are in the 3-star category. It tiers upwards. So 3 stars should represent the majority of high schoolers that get to campus. 4 stars is like a very good contributor level category. And then the top end of that is probably a very good all conference level type player. And then, like you said, the 5 stars are your most influential category.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of variance within that too, right? Like we're trying to predict the future of 17, 18 year old high school baseball players. Like, yeah, there's going to be a lot of guys who are, you know, coming from that 3-star group, we're like, hey, we're not just putting a 3-star on every high school baseball player in the country who's going to go play Division I baseball. I think it's 400 and some odd, I don't know the exact number of players offhand, but who have a star rating. There's a lot more players than that who are going to want to play college baseball. There's a lot of, if we're putting a 3-star or above, certainly on a player, we're saying, hey, this is a guy who is both of interest to major league clubs at some level, and somebody we think can be, you know, a meaningful college baseball player, and also, you know, at a high level, but also somebody who, yeah, there might be, you know, even more upside here for this 3-star to be more than just like a steady college contributor. This, you know, we do expect some guys who will be future All-Americans, future impact players at the collegiate level coming from this group too.
Were you surprised at all throughout the draft by the level of five stars being selected, four stars being selected? This year we had the fourth fewest high school picks in the top 135 ever. Overall, I believe it was about 20% of the draft, 127 high school players who were selected. Was that number within range of expectation for you? Did it lean more towards school? What was your reaction to that?
It ended up more or less around what we were expecting to see, or what I was expecting to see, I thought. I think that it just looked the way, and I saw some comment today from Rob Manfred from his press conference about, that's something somebody asked him about, banning high school players from the draft with his MLB's proposal. And he's like, yeah, of course. Look how college heavy the draft was. It's just a natural, that's what teams want to do. And it's like, well, no, the teams kind of have to do that. They want to sign more high school players, but they're structuring the draft in a way that intentionally tilts it toward college players, especially after the first few rounds, because they'd love to sign more high school players, but then they just run out of bonus pool money and the high school players want, $1 million, $2 million, $4 million, or even, $500,000, $600,000. And it's tough to fit those guys into your bonus pool, and those players have the leverage to go on and play college baseball. And the college players don't. Well, I mean, maybe there is a little bit more leverage now. We could talk a little bit about that, but especially for the college seniors, it's like, what are you going to do? They just don't have any leverage. So I think it just, the MLB sets up the draft in a way that's structured for teams to already really go heavily after college players.
And to your point, I think that we are, especially for this class, this is kind of the pilot class of this. We are in an era where I think the high schooler has more leverage than it's ever had, because you have two things going for you. One is you go to campus and you're going to get paid. And that's a given. And whether you're going to get paid a ton of money out the gate, or you're going to go to school, you're going to play a year or two, and then you're going to transfer later on and get paid as a junior or as a sophomore, remains to be seen. But like, these guys are going to be compensated for their services by going to play college baseball. And this class, the first ever, is going into a college landscape where they will have 5 years of eligibility now. The age-based eligibility system is kicking in. And so if you are on the fence about, do I turn pro out of high school or do I go to college, not only are you going to get compensated, but you have as long a runway as any player has ever legally had in college baseball to recoup some of that value, to earn more in college, and then enter the draft again as a college player, which, to your point, is as lucrative as it's ever been as well because of the way that the draft is structured.
Yeah, I think there are some college players who you could say, and I'm sure this was the case for them this year, where, hey, an MLB team calls and says, yeah, we'd love to draft you in, somewhere in the top 10 rounds, sign you for, let's say, $300,000, just using a number for illustrative purposes. Okay, that's pretty good bonus. Or you go back to school and let's say, okay, well, maybe I'll make, let's just even say it's half that, right? $150,000. Okay, well, I'll go back to school, continue to get my degree, get $150,000, go back again. And if I'm, just continue to be another really good player like I have been this year, all right, maybe I'll get another $300,000 next year. And you look at the sum total of what you end up getting is greater than what you would have gotten had you signed right out of the draft and then, gone on to make a pretty minor league salary. So at the end of the day, the sum total ends up working out even greater in the player's favor, which puts a little bit more leverage in the hands of the college baseball player. And obviously is for college baseball fans is a good thing to see some of your, high end, a very good college baseball player, but maybe a decent, not great professional prospect who would have otherwise gone on pro ball in the, maybe even just a few years ago.
Did you get the sense in your conversations with agents and scouts and teams and, college coaches throughout the week leading up to the draft and draft weekend that there's a little bit of added confidence on the college side about getting some of these high schoolers to campus? Because in my experience in the week leading up to the draft this year, unlike any before, a lot of the conversations with coaches especially was like, we feel really good about getting this, top player or top tier type player, four star, to put it in the context of how we do recruiting now, to campus. And I don't know that that was the case even remotely last year. Like the year-to-year difference to me in terms of confidence was pretty significant. What did you think or experience?
I think so to an extent. You're also still, especially with that, you know, like with the top, you know, if a guy's like a top 15 high school player, you know, in the country, you know, you're probably not getting that guy. Like, it's very, very long shot odds. As you get a little bit deeper down, and especially into that four-star tier, you'd certainly have a lot more optimism about it. But at the same time, I think there's still a lot of coaches that are on edge and like kind of putting on that full court press to those players to tell them, you know, whatever they want to hear, or just tell them to try to persuade them to come to college. But at the same time, hey, like, those guys, they also know they're still draft risk. And I look, a lot of it too depends on just the asking prices of those players, right? Like, a, you know, you have some four-star players that are looking for $3 million, $4 million. And it's like, well, like, the teams, you know, the MLB teams might like those guys. It's hard to fit those guys into your bonus pool. Whereas other guys are willing to sign for, you know, $1 million or even less than that in some cases. And in that, I think that signability plays just a huge role in whether you get those guys to school or not.
Let's take a look at some of the top classes now. There were some teams that made out really well. And if you want to read about some of them, you can go over to baseballamerica.com. I did a piece, College Baseball Winners and Losers from the Draft, where we took a look at some bigger themes, but also some of the teams that really made out well, just in terms of getting some of these high-end players to campus. Let's start with Vanderbilt, Ben. They were the number one class in the country coming into the draft. We are tabulating class rankings now a little bit differently. It does depend in part on five-star, you know, four-star rating and just overall ranking. And Vanderbilt was up top. I would imagine that they're going to stay there even after the draft.
They will be very high up there. That's for sure. And then they have a very good case to be number one. Look, they lost EJ Booth. No doubt, obviously, he was going to be a top 10 overall pick. They lost Aiden Ruiz, shortstop. There was very little chance they were going to lose him. Losing Sean Duncan is maybe not a surprise. And also, I don't know how much it maybe, you know, he's a left-handed pitcher from Canada. He's going to have Tommy John surgery, so he would have missed, presumably, next year. Anyway, still things to lose him. They lose Luke Williams, Keon Johnson, Colin Bland. Look, any of these guys we talk about who are drafted, by the way, in the top 10 rounds, they're getting drafted because the teams, more or less in almost every case, have a deal in place with them. Now, doesn't always happen. Obviously, Tyler Bell got to Kentucky. Chris Lavonis is at Wake Forest right now. Angel Cervantes is at UCLA. So there's still some slim chance those guys don't sign, but it's like 98 to 99% chance that those guys sign. So they definitely had a lot of losses in the draft, but the reason they had a lot of losses is they had so much high-end talent in their recruiting class. So they can withstand those losses. And if you look at, I mean, they got 3 5-star players to campus. So they got, I believe it's 3 of our top 10 ranked high school players who went undrafted are going to Vanderbilt. You get, starting at the top, you get Joseph Contreras, who's a right-handed pitcher, number 19 high school player in the class. I mean, if you ask me, who would you rather have between Contreras or Savion Sims, right, who's an Oklahoma commit, drafted by the Guardians, I believe it was in the 7th round, who's a better prospect? Or if you asked 100 MLB scouts, who's a better prospect? I don't think you'd get like more than a 60-40 answer one way or the other. Savion Sims looks like he's going to Pro Bowl. Joseph Contreras is going to be going to Vanderbilt. Noah Wilson, center fielder, outstanding runner. In games where I'm watching him play, he's hitting about 930. Like, I think he's a really good hitter, really good athlete, potential premium position guy. To get a guy like that to campus, I think, is a huge win for them. Eli Hurst is a 6'5", ultra, ultra projectable right-handed pitcher. He's been up to 94. And I think the thing with him is that the velocity didn't take a jump forward this spring that I think a lot of scouts were hoping for, but it is just elite extension, a ton of really good traits on all of his pitches, the breaking ball, the changeup. I think the fastball velocity is going to jump. I think a lot of MLB teams really are very high on him. It could take a jump as soon as this fall, but it's a lot of starter traits there too. There's some other guys where maybe, okay, this guy throws harder, more of a relief risk, even in college. I think Eli Hurst is a starter all the way with huge upside. So to get those three guys in particular to campus is big. A guy like Bo Holloway, big hard throwing left-handed pitcher. And then I think one of the bigger wins too for them is getting Gunnar Skelton to school, right? High school shortstop in-state from Tennessee, where I think he, you know, coming into the spring, I thought this guy's going to be a really good college baseball player. Beyond that, I don't know. Like, I think if he goes to, you know, I thought if he goes to Vanderbilt, performs well there, should have a chance to be a potentially a pretty high draft pick in a few years. And then he went out after his senior season this year and was awesome in the Appalachian League. So you see a guy who is going out and dominating with wood bats against some really good college baseball players right away as essentially a high school senior this year. Okay, that gives me even more confidence that this guy's going to be a really good college baseball player. So to get those guys, and look, there's even more depth to the talent that they're bringing into campus from this freshman class, but like, those are pretty impactful players to be headlining your class.
When you said the biggest win, I thought you were going to say RJ Cope, just as the physically biggest win that they could have gotten to campus.
I wanted to give myself a breath at least just to let you come in for a second there. But yeah, it's another literally huge one for Vanderbilt.
They also did well in the transfer portal. I think that's another important aspect of this, because we'll get into it more with other teams, but there are a number of schools that beat the draft. Tennessee will be the best example of this on the transfer side as well, because there are some elements of the college recruiting process that can appeal even to guys who are in their first year of draft eligibility, which is where you have the majority of your leverage. Vanderbilt still won in that case too. Matt Conte was a draft eligible sophomore transferring from Wake Forest. He will end up on campus, and I would imagine that he is the day one starter. But you look at who else didn't get drafted. Colin Barksy, their starting catcher from 2026, did not get drafted, and to this moment on July 14th at 2 p.m. basically, Eastern time, he has not been signed. So you have a chance to get one of the best power hitting catchers in college baseball back to campus, and you have Matt Conte, who could have been drafted but was not. So it is one of the most elite classes despite its losses. Similarly, Tennessee, a perfect transition. I mean, that is another group that had some big high-level losses, but at the same time, a ton of wins that should keep that class inside, I would say, roughly the top 5 to 8 after we recalculate the numbers, but they were second, I believe, going into the draft.
Yeah, I think they'll still be extremely high after this. You know, you lose the obvious guys, right? Trevor Condit, Jared Grindlinger, there's really no question those guys are going to be first-round picks. It was just, you know, how high in the first round were they going to go? You know, you lose Caden McCarthy. Not really surprising, big five-star commit out of Vermont. Had a pretty good sense he was going to go pretty high. I think the two losses for them that are maybe a little bit more, not surprising, but maybe sting a little bit more, where you didn't necessarily know they were going to get drafted, were Tyler Putnam, who's a huge right-handed pitcher with a big fastball, and Cody Boschel in the 11th round, where if a guy's drafted in the 11th round, too, that's usually one where, okay, teams know how much bonus pool space they still have after the top 10 rounds. So they're calling guys with that 11th round pick. That's like, okay, this is the guy we're going to go over slot for. Now, not a guarantee, but I would say pretty good chance that those 11th round picks are going to be signing. So losing a potential power bat like that does sting, but you're getting, you know, Cole Kininger, shortstop, right-handed pitcher. I don't know which way he's going to lean toward. We'll figure that out, or Tennessee will figure that out. But he's really good on both sides of the ball. Gannon Grant and Gary Morris, two big time arms. Gannon Grant is just like elite spin traits on his breaking ball. North of 3,000 RPM, and the fastball velocity really jumped this year to, you know, mid upper 90s, where he's touching. Gary Morris is 6'8" and, you know, good fastball and a great, great changeup. Breaking ball is going to need to come along, but you know, two really high-end pitches there. Sean Dunlap is a catcher where I think they're fortunate where they don't, you know, need somebody to come in right away and fill a catching role at Tennessee, but long-term, I mean, really athletic, huge power. I think there's still some swing and miss risk there, but arm strength just does a lot of really outlier things from the catching position. And then you just go up and down like the rest of their class. There's just a lot of really interesting guys who do things that are in different ways to add a lot of depth to that class too. But you're getting a mix of, even with some of those losses, really high-end talent and a lot of quality depth throughout that class.
And then, as I said a second ago, I think the other takeaway from Tennessee is just the amount of portal talent that is expected to get to Knoxville. Mm-hmm. Ricky Ojeda, who we had at one point kind of sniffing the top 100, had a bit of a down year at UC Irvine. He enters the portal, goes undrafted because he set a number, according to a couple of sources, that was high enough that teams weren't really comfortable with it, but he was able to get to campus where they are going to obviously pay him. Hayden Simerson is a reliever from Clemson, big fastball. He also went undrafted. Parker Detmers, who I think that was a little bit more of a fringe case just because of the amount of time he's missed over the last two seasons due to injury, doesn't get drafted. He's getting to campus. And Travis Sanders, the shortstop from Baylor, has another year of eligibility, is getting to campus. Plus, and this is where I think this gets a little bit interesting, Jake McCoy from South Carolina, the left-hander, who we had very much in consideration for a very early pick prior to him blowing out before the season at Tommy John surgery. He went in the 18th round to the Blue Jays. I think all indications would be that that's the kind of player that still gets to campus. And Andrew Duncan, the outfielder from Wright State, was a 19th round pick to the Pirates. Tennessee is extremely confident that that's not going to be an issue. According to a couple of sources, I think that the NIL on that one has kind of won that battle. Plus, I will, in real time, I have gathered some intel here. Cole Kininger will be a two-way player at Tennessee.
Yeah, he should be. He'd be a high-end prospect. And I know ML teams, again, they like this guy both ways. I like that they're going to give him the opportunity to do both ways and figure out, hey, which one is better. Or, like you said, maybe he can do both in college.
Yeah, and this Tennessee coaching staff in particular actually seems to be you know, very willing to let some of these guys try it both ways. I wouldn't even be surprised, correct me if I'm wrong, but Cody Boschel, if he gets to campus, 11th round pick, I know that kind of goes either way, but I believe he's an outfielder and left-handed pitcher, which I would imagine Tennessee will be willing to give a shot.
Yeah. I think his future is best as a hitter, sure. But he does, you know, good fastball from the left side, maybe not like the cleanest delivery, but you could definitely get outs maybe out of a bullpen role for them if they needed.
Big second half of the season coming up. There might be a hot ticket, a rivalry series, a sold out experience that you need to get your hands on. And SeatGeek is the spot for that. You can find good pricing. They help you with the pricing. Green dot, good. Red dot, not as good. And they help you with your view of the seat for some big matchups coming up in August, September, and eventually leading up to playoffs.
Why would you not use SeatGeek? If you want to view from your seat, you want to know if it's a good seat, if it's a good deal, it has all of it on the app. It's easy to use. It's one click, boom. You buy the tickets, they send them right to you. You get them on the app, and then you can go check out whatever game, whatever you're a fan of, you can go to, whether it's baseball, whether it's concerts, whatever you're into, you can find a ticket, and you can always try to find the green dot on SeatGeek.
And for MLB tickets, you can get 10% off with that promo code we're running all season long, Territory10. That's Territory10 off your next set of MLB tickets at SeatGeek. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later.
Much to everybody's chagrin, we do have to talk about LSU. This team also did excellent when it comes to the draft. Lost a good bit. Logan Schmidt, Jensen Hirschhorn, Wesley Roberson, Dylan Blomker, all guys who were taken inside the top 10 rounds. They had, I believe, five other high school players taken outside the top 10. Spencer Evans and Will Adams in the 11th round. And then three others very late, which to me would indicate they're probably going to get to campus. But, you know, I'll let you opine on that. Generally, though, this was a very good day for LSU.
Yeah, I think so. You lose your top two in Schmidt and Hirschhorn. And I think the Hirschhorn one maybe stings a little bit because, man, he had a big price tag and you're wondering, okay, like, does the team meet that? And the answer was yes. He's really good. And the team was willing to meet that. I think it was about $4 million he got The other one I think that stings is, you know, we'll see if he signs. But again, 11th round pick, those are usually the ones where the teams say, okay, we know how much bonus pool money we have. Let's make sure we have somebody who's willing to take it. Is Will Adams, you know, an outfielder, could play first base. He's playing center field, I think, this year for his high school team. But, you know, long-term more of a corner outfield, first baseman. But, you know, really good hitting ability, power combination with him. Okay, you lose those guys. You, like you said, Roberson, Blomker, Spencer Evans, also in the 11th round, left-handed pitcher out of Florida. But there's still a lot of talent coming to campus, right? Like Malachi Washington is just an ultra explosive athlete. He's young for the class, potential power speed threat there. When I've watched him, I've always liked his defensive reads and routes in center field too. There's a little bit of rawness still there as like a hitter. Like, don't come in expecting Derek Curiel right off the bat. Like, that's not him, but it's something where, wow, if everything comes together, it's just like a really exciting, explosive package with him that is going to be a lot of fun if everything clicks. Nate Davis obviously pulled his name out of the draft, another really athletic outfielder. And a lot of good arms coming to this class too, right? Like Lucas Nowrocki withdrew from the draft. Cooper Sides, ultra projectable, 6'5", 6'6", right-handed pitcher from Southern California. Colby Stringer out of Mississippi, where I heard his name this spring. I mean, I think I know the high school players pretty well when they're underclassmen. So when somebody pops up where I'm like, I don't know who this guy is in their draft year, that's pretty unusual. So just a really unusual story, but his stuff took a huge jump this year. A lot of MLB scouts coming in to his games to see him. So there's certainly some draft risk there to get a guy like him to campus. Colton Brady, another, you know, 6'5", big projectable arm. So a lot of really good arms that are going to be coming to campus for LSU, and I think supplementing what already is some pretty, you know, interesting players throughout that lineup and incoming into that lineup to the transfer portal this year.
I'm gonna flip the script on you here. I'm gonna do something that I said I wouldn't do in our little pre-show meeting. Let's talk about Texas because it is a little bit of an interesting case, and they did. If you read my winners and losers story, I did put them in the losers category, but I couched that a little bit by saying it's not really a loser. It's more a loser in the sense of there was a lot of high-end talent. The highest-end talent that Texas had in its recruiting class will be turning pro almost certainly. But that being said, kind of in the light of Vanderbilt, there is a ton of depth and still a ton of high-end talent that's expected to get to campus as well. But of their five-star recruits, they had five. Four are expected to go play pro ball.
Yeah. Yeah, I read what you wrote. I think it's fair. I mean, look, obviously, like Grady Emerson, yeah, like the odds of him going to, you know, pro ball were about the same as the sun rising that morning. You know, Brody Bamilla, it was a little bit more uncertainty with him just given the second UCL injury that he has. And then Cooper Harris, I think that one was, all right, probably going to lose him. Just a ton of interest from MLB teams. The one where I do think it's going to really sting for them is losing Bo Peterson, who's, you know, third base, right-hand pitcher from Kansas, primarily a third baseman. He's one where I thought maybe 50-50, does he sign or not? Maybe even leaning toward getting to college. They're going to lose him, obviously, unless something goes wrong from here on out. But that's one where I think, man, if he got to school, he could be just a middle of the lineup force for them because he's a good hitter. There's power, there's strength, somebody who, I mean, it's hard to stand out as a freshman in an everyday role in the SEC, and he is that type of player. I think he had that type of talent, and even if not as a freshman, certainly by the time he's a sophomore or junior, just could be a really high-end hitter with hitting ability and power. So I think that one that's the one that really stings for me. But I think you just look at the rest of their recruiting class, there's a lot of talent still coming to Texas, especially with the pitching. Trey Rangel to me is, he's just one of my favorite arms in this high school class, and he has been for a long time. He reminds me some of Tegan Coons, from Tennessee, where another 19-year-old high school right-handed pitcher who will be a draft-eligible sophomore in a couple of years with outstanding arm speed, really lean frame, and great ability to spin the ball. I mean, 3,000-plus RPM, breaking ball, great ability to manipulate that pitch. I think he's somebody who is going to come in and after 2 years could be drafted in a similar spot where Coons was this year, somewhere, you know, I don't remember offhand, in the 30s to the Cardinals, maybe even higher next year. I think that's a great get for Texas. There's some other, you know, good arms in that class cutting to school, guys like Cooper Webb, Hayes Holton, James Jorgensen. And then I think the other one that really jumps out to me as a guy to watch is Finn Beard, who's a left-handed pitcher from Tennessee. And I wasn't totally sure what MLB teams and MLB scouts were going to think about him, because it's like, all right, 6 foot, compact body, left-handed pitcher on the older side for the class. And it's not like elite velocity or a lot of physical projection there. But I mean, Jacob, this guy's throwing, you know, it's up to 94, so he's sitting low 90s. But he has so much carry on his fastball, and it's just so hard for hitters to see it. He would just be throwing 92-mile-an-hour fastballs up in the zone against some of the best high school hitters in the class last summer. And these guys looked like they were a bunch of 8-year-olds swinging blindfolded trying to hit a pinata at a birthday party. They just had no chance. So I think the traits that he has on his fastball, his ability to miss bats with that fastball from the left side, is going to continue to translate and get a lot of swing and miss in college, to the point where I think he's going to be somebody who can be a weapon right away for Texas. They don't really need a lot of help in their starting rotation right now. I don't think that's going to be the immediate fit or the immediate role for him. But hey, like, you know, you're bringing in, you know, Dylan Volantis or Sam Cozart, and then all of a sudden you're bringing in this guy for a different look, where it's not like you're getting multiple looks at him through, you know, as a hitter. You just get one look and you're like, what was that that just flew by my bat up in the zone? So I think he's going to have a chance to be an immediate contributor for Texas. And by the time he's a sophomore or junior, I think it's, you know, potential jumper that starting rotation and be a major factor for them is on the table for that.
That's such a great point though, that you made about just the ability to contribute as a freshman, especially at a place like Texas. That might be one of the poster child type schools in the country right now when it comes to getting talented players on campus, getting them up to college speed in their first fall, and then having them in a position to be able to contribute right out the gate. Sam Cozart was that way this year. He was an All-American because of it. Mm-hmm. Dylan Volantis was our freshman of the year prior because of it. I mean, you can go up and down that pitching staff, and there are a lot of guys that were able to come in, especially under Max Wiener, and contribute immediately because he seems to be able to extract so much value out of all these guys. And honestly, they do it on the other side of the ball too. They are not afraid to play freshman hitters. If you come out there and you look like you're ready to go, you will be in the Texas lineup. So it's a great place to be for a first-year player. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about some classes that had the opposite weekend, some groups that lost some players. We've gone through some of the top classes in the country, just in terms of who maybe won draft weekend. Who were some of the teams that stood out to you on the other end of that? Some of the teams that got picked apart a little bit on the high school side.
Yeah, the way I look at it is, what did these programs lose relative to what we expected them to lose, right? So, okay, Miami has the 8th ranked recruiting class in the country coming into the draft. We also knew that they were going to take a tumble down those rankings as soon as Jacob Lombard and as soon as Gio Rojas got drafted in the first round. So that's not really a surprise there. They do keep, obviously, rookie Shepard, who withdrew from the draft. Good left-handed hitting shortstop. Devin Diaz, they get through the draft too. Athletic catcher with a great arm, pretty good contact skills from the right side of the plate. So, but I think the team that jumps out to me that the most as a team that got hit was Oklahoma. And it looked like it was going really well for Oklahoma through day one, right? We get through the first 4 or 5 rounds. We get into the 6th round. they don't have anyone drafted. They have a five-star recruit in Savion Sims. They have, I think it was five, four stars in their class. And then the seventh round comes around, and there goes Savion Sims to the Guardians. And then there goes Jack Brenner, a catcher from Wisconsin, who's a four-star recruit. He gets drafted in the seventh round. And if guys are getting drafted in the top 10 rounds, you can pretty much count on those guys signing. So, okay, they'll probably lose those two guys. And then this is going to be interesting to see what happens with two other four stars they had in Josiah Kemp, who's an outfielder from Oklahoma. He's the nephew of Matt Kemp. He's a athletic center fielder, really good defensive instincts, just really good all around baseball instincts. No real surprise there. Good bat to ball skills, gap to gap type guy at the plate. He gets drafted in the 12th round. And then in the 15th round, again, to be determined if he signs or not, but Cameron Jackson, a shortstop from Georgia, switch hitter, four-star recruit. So they're probably going to lose at least two of those guys. And if they lose Kemp and or Jackson, that's going to sting for their class. I think they have a chance to really take a slide down the rankings. And if they get too upset, obviously they can, you know, wipe their tears with their championship trophy. So things aren't going too bad over there in Oklahoma anyway right now. But that is definitely one class that jumps out to me as, like it looked like it was going so well at first. And then, hit them pretty hard in the second day.
When, in your experience, when a high school prospect is selected in the 12th round, like Josiah Kemp, or the 15th round, like Cameron Jackson or Ahmed Nasser, like what are the chances of those guys getting to campus? Are teams doing that to kind of take a shot in the dark, or are they doing that mostly because they know that they're going to be able to have enough money to get that kid to make a good decision for them?
So in the if it's the 11th round, those are the guys where I think, you know, you're lining them up where you're like, okay, we know how much bonus pool money we have, and the teams are calling a whole bunch of guys. Will you take this? Will you take that? Will you take this? Will you take, you know, this money? And when they, you know, whoever is highest on their board who says yes, that's who they're going to draft because they want to use that money on somebody they know they can sign. The 12th rounds, again, it's still in consideration where, you know, the team knows how much bonus pool money it has. So maybe there, I think there's probably a better chance, you know, not having any, you know, having made any, you know, a lot of calls on this necessarily, it's probably a better chance just seeing Kemp going in the 12th round than there is, you know, for the 15th round pick that you're getting there in terms of the odds of signing, especially after the Giants took a college guy in Charlie Bussey in the 11th round. So maybe that is their overslot, or, you know, the guy they're using the rest of their bonus pool money on. Once you get, I think, yeah, you're right, though. Once you get toward, certainly like you mentioned earlier, it's like the guys who are like 18th, 19th, 20th round pick, those are just like the insurance guys where if something really goes wrong with one of your earlier signings and you end up having more money to spend on that guy than you thought before, you take him just in case. But yeah, I think Kemp is definitely at risk for being a loss for them.
What'd you make of Florida State's weekend? Because on the pure college side of things, I think that the guys who they expected to be drafted were maybe John Abraham and Hunter Carnes are examples of guys who you would have thought would have been drafted but weren't. And then on the high school side, you lose, obviously, Landon Tomei was expected to be drafted the entire time. He's a first-round pick to the White Sox. Caden Wachter, always expected to lose him. He goes in the second round. But that was, I mean, really, that was it. Steven Gonzalez was the only other commit they had who was selected, if I remember correctly, in the 13th round. Everybody else was unpicked. So it seems like that's a team that has a pretty good chance to land some solid talent. But the guys who they lose are obviously very significant.
Yeah, yeah. I think Tomei pretty much knew he was gone. Wachter, you know, really good pitchability. I don't want to undersell his stuff by just calling him pitchability, but he certainly distinguishes himself from some other guys who have big stuff and less idea of where it's going in that class. He's pretty polished, so pretty much figured you were going to lose him, but there's still some good arms getting to campus. Donovan Thierry and Braden Harris, both four-star recruits from the state of Florida. Thierry is 6'5". He's got big stuff up to 96, 97 miles an hour. This year, Braden Harris just consistently gets outs, maybe not as much like physical upside and projection. He's 19 years old, the drafts probably knocks him down some draft boards for that. But I expect this guy to come in and be a really good college pitcher pretty quickly for Florida State. And then the two guys to watch in the lineup are on the position player side are Yodelki, Quevedo, and Jensen Veras, you know, two more guys from Florida. These two guys have just stupid raw power. Now they both have question marks on how much are they going to hit and like breaking ball recognition and swing and miss and all that. But like Jensen Veras in particular had an absolute monster season this year and translating that power against some pretty good pitching that he was facing too. So like, yeah, I think pro teams looked at him and said, yeah, he's got a lot of tools and no question about how much power he has. But like we saw for a lot of players, both on the college side and the high school side in the draft, guys with some swing and miss risk got knocked down boards. And obviously in his case, it got him to school. But this guy is, I mean, I'm not going to say he's like Miles Bailey, but like it's pretty top of the scale type of power. You don't see too many guys who are going to produce bigger EV numbers than him next year, even just as a freshman.
The other team that I would throw into this kind of tweener category where it's like you lost some guys that you expected to lose, but maybe there are some wins on the back end is Mississippi State. They lose Rocco Maniscalco in the second round. Will Brick, who we thought had a chance to, you know, go as high as inside the top 40 picks, goes in the fourth round to the Blue Jays. Expectation there is that he'll sign. Martin Shalar goes in the ninth round to the Red Sox. That's almost like a guaranteed sign with the way that they saved money early on. And then yeah. Denton Lord, 17th round pick to the Padres. That's probably the range where you start to get a little bit more confident about guys getting to school. And that was it on the high school side for their draftees. So it seems like a good blend of talent that will get to campus. But again, kind of like Florida State, those top three, Maniscalco, Brick, and Shalar, are big losses.
Yeah, I think you were, you know, you probably were expecting, especially two guys who reclassified in Brick and in Maniscalco. Like you're not generally reclassifying so you can get to college baseball a year sooner. You're doing it to be younger in the draft and have those advantages. Like I think those guys are looking to go to pro ball and it's obviously working out for them. The Martin Shalar ones I think really stinks. He's a polarizing guy in the pro scouting community just because of the way his swing works. It's not a swing that looks like a lot of major league hitters' swings, but he has huge power and he has really good hand-eye coordination. So he's able to make that swing work for him, obviously, in high school. And I think it would have worked kind of all the way we were talking about Bo Peterson with Texas, where if he had gone to school, it's kind of the same thing with Martin Shalar, where I thought he'd be a great, great college baseball player who can make a quick impact because he has that hand-eye coordination and that strength that's going to translate quickly or would have translated quickly. So I think that's a loss, but man, I mean, you look at the arms that they're going to get at Mississippi State. Wilson Anderson, 6'4", right-handed pitcher, up to the upper 90s. Denton Lord as well. He's 6'8", just like long arms, legs. Another guy with a big power stuff. Feel for a breaking ball. I agree. It's probably a long shot that the Padres end up signing him unless something else goes haywire elsewhere in that class. And then Jake Carbaugh too. I'm a big fan of Jake Carbaugh, 6'6", just like a very different look even than some of these other big arms that they have. It's more of like a lower release height guy, more of like an east-west type attack with just a ton of arm side run on the fastball, feel to spin the ball. Like I'm probably even higher on Jake Carbaugh than a lot of scouts are, although I think a lot of scouts like him too, but I'm pretty excited about him. And then Landon Brown, another, you know, big power arm out of Texas for them. So the pitching, even though they lost those three hitters, the pitching that Mississippi State is bringing in is about as good as anybody in the country.
It's also worth mentioning here because it 100% matters when it comes to the overall building of a class. The transfer portal was kind to Mississippi State as well. Berkeley maybe as the catcher from Oregon doesn't get drafted. He'll end up on campus. He was an eligible sophomore. Jackson Scheinflew, a lefty from South Alabama. Interesting release traits guy. It's a little bit light on velocity, but he posted in the Sun Belt this year. Now he's headed to the SEC, where I would imagine he's going to be a high usage, you know, big time reliever. And then Nick Robert, same thing from Miami. Is he going to go and jump into Mississippi State's rotation? Virtually no chance, kind of in the same ilk as Texas. This rotation is very decided. Tomas Valinkas is going to be the Friday guy. And then in some order, Duke Stone and Ryan McPherson will go on Saturday and Sunday. It's all but decided. But Nick Robert is an experienced college player who will go to school for his senior year unless a team is going to get surprising here and sign him as an undrafted player. But all indications are that all three of those guys will still end up on campus. So it seems like, depending on how you want to look at it, it's kind of a winning weekend for Mississippi State, even in spite of the fact that there were some guys that I think that you want to hang on to. And also, I will mention, they did have some UDFA losses that I thought maybe would hurt them. Tyler Pitzer in particular was somebody who I thought would have a chance to go back to school, but he signed yesterday with the Padres. Brendan Sweeney, the same thing. He signed with the Phillies. Blake Beavis was the other. He signed with the Cubs. So kind of a mixed bag there if you're Mississippi State. Any other schools, Ben, that you want to talk about before we get out of here?
Yeah, I mean, those are the big heavy hitters, I think. I mean, Stanford obviously jumps out. They're always a team where, you know, you figure they're going to get almost, if not every single recruit to campus. This year they had an unusually talented recruit in Tyler Spangler, and he didn't play this season. So I think there was, even as talented as he is, there was still a little bit of uncertainty as to whether they were going to get him. He goes to the Phillies, I think it was 36 overall. So that one hurts. But hey, Archer Horn is our highest ranked guy in the high school class getting to school. You get him, you get Bryce Hill, you get some other really good players in that class. So that one, that's definitely a school that jumps out to me. And then, you know, you just go a little bit deeper down the list, and certainly like a heavy SEC, ACC flavor. That's where a lot of the top recruits are going. But you get to Cincinnati, and I think they do a really good job of identifying players. Often, man, I would say late bloomers, like these are still high school players, but just, you know, when players are getting a lot of attention and standing out when they're, you know, 16, 17 years old, you know, come August 1st, or, you know, obviously in this class, before the new rules, even earlier, you know, they're doing a good job of identifying guys like, you know, Jack Slightem, who now they are going to lose to the draft, unfortunately for them, who's, you know, who elevated himself into a five-star recruit. So that one is going to sting for them, but they still have a lot of really good talent in the class going to Cincinnati. So I think if you just look at the schools that are, and look, Cincinnati's a good program, but just schools outside like the SEC, ACC, but you know, guys like a shortstop, like Gavin Michaels, or pitching like a Harrison Paulino, Cole Adams, Sebastian Scholski. There's just like a lot of really good sneaky players that they did a good job of identifying, especially early on, and guys who just like continue to get better. And I think are going to be really, really productive players for that program.
And then not to bring it back into the power structure of the SEC and ACC, but the two schools that I would in closing mention, Florida, I think had a really good weekend. Kevin Roberts was a fourth round pick to the Orioles, but you got guys like Brady Harris and a number of other five-star, four-star types that are going to be getting to campus. And then Duke, I think, deserves a little bit of totally attention for the weekend that they had. James Clark is the heaviest hitter there. He is going to get to campus when unselected. And then they had a number of college guys on their roster who I thought had a chance to be selected. Cider Cannon, probably the best example of that. But in some conversations with sources, it was pretty clear that Cannon and a number of other guys from their active roster had numbers that made it pretty clear that their intention was to return to school, and that's what they're going to do. So for Corey Buscara and the Blue Devils, who I know are looking to kind of really take a step forward after, you know, missing the tournament this past year, the draft was kind in that sense. All right. Any closing thoughts for you, Ben? What stands out to you? Big themes, things you're looking forward to? What do you got for us as we get out of here?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can probably just hear from the conversation we were having of like, okay, well, who got rated, or, you know, which class got hammered through the draft. Like, there wasn't anyone in particular that got hit like a whole lot worse than we were expecting. So I think a lot of the recruiting classes that we have, the top of our rankings, are going to hold there at the top for the most part. You're not going to see too many changes. Obviously, like I said, Miami is going to drop some, but as expected, And I think that's just probably something that we'll probably see continuing going forward. Obviously, we'll see what the rule changes are for the draft. I mean, it could be pretty sweeping rule changes for the draft based on MLB's proposal. But I think that's just going to be a trend that continues where, yeah, like if you have these top-end classes, especially at the top where you're getting top-end players and depth, even if you have some losses, you can withstand them. And the reality is there just aren't that many high school players who are getting signed, right? Like it's, I think it was like 90 something players last year. And even a lot of players from that group are like not necessarily the top high school players that teams are wanting to sign the most. It's, oh, this kid's willing to take $150,000 to sign because he just doesn't want to go to school and wants to play pro ball. And that's, you know, that's great for those players, but it also just means like there's just not that many like star players, or just there's just not that many high school high-end recruits that you're losing, right? Especially once you get beyond that five-star group where, okay, like, yeah, we expect about 15 or so of those guys to get to campus every year, but beyond that, yeah, teams are still going to be on edge about their four stars and some of the other guys beyond that who are maybe a little bit more signable in terms of their lower asking prices relative to their talent level. But I think it's something we're just going to continue to see going forward in future drafts too.
And I think that is a perfect way of, you know, looking at this. The college baseball is in a point right now where the popularity and the intensity and the level of competition that exists is at an all-time high. You can ask a number of college coaches, administrators, you know, NCAA personnel, and they will tell you that they have never felt as good about the state of college baseball as they feel right now. And part of that is because of what we're talking about here, which is that there are a lot of high-end high schoolers that are going to get to campus. There are a lot of high-end transfers. And I think that that's, you know, kind of the other wrinkle that's really cool about this is that there are guys like Jake McCoy, I think is a great example, who are sticking around in college to, you know, whether it's to prove themselves or to collect on what is a very significant payday from an NIL perspective. It is enhancing the game of college baseball. And I think that we are getting to a point now where the caliber of play at that level is outstanding. And so if you want coverage of that, you got to head on over to baseballamerica.com. You can go to baseballamerica.com/college for all of our college specific content. Ben is doing tons and tons on the high school side. So if you have a high school player committed to your school that you want to know about, Ben almost certainly has some sort of writing about that guy up on the internet at Baseball America, and I would encourage you to check that out as well. So for Ben Badler, I'm Jacob Rudner. Thanks for listening to this episode of the College Podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks, as that is our off-season programming. But we thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.